Welcome to Supersized Science, where we feature research and discoveries nationwide enabled by advanced computing technology and expertise at the Texas Advanced Computing Center of the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Jorge Salazar, a science writer at TAC. A new mechanism has been determined for the first time for the passive transport of biomolecules through the nuclear pore complex, which are apertures that perforate the otherwise iron-clad membrane surrounding the cell nucleus and act like crossing guards for macromolecular traffic in and out of the nucleus. If the crossing guard misfires, it can cause human diseases such as cancer, viral infections, and neurodegenerative conditions. The research team developed their model through supercomputer simulations on the Frontera and Stampede 2 systems of TAC, and they hope their work will guide the development of future therapeutics. The work was published in the journal Nature Communications in August 2022. On the line to talk more about it are study co-authors David Winogradoff and Alexey Aksimentiev. Winogradoff completed the study as a postdoctoral research associate working with co-author and Professor Aksimentiev in the Department of Physics at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He's now a computational polymer chemist with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Doctors Winogradoff and Aksimentiev, welcome to Supersized Science.
Sure. Pleasure.
Welcome.
Would you speak to the main findings of your study on nuclear pore complexes? And this was published September of 2022 in Nature Communications.
So really what we focused on was the thermodynamics and timescale of passive transport through the nuclear pore complex. And we took really what I would say is a two-pronged approach. The first was to run coarse-grain simulations. And from those simulations, those unbiased simulations, we observed rare and rapid crossing events. From those set of simulations, we looked at the empty space and something we called void analysis. From that analysis, we developed a percolation theory. So essentially, we observed that there's a switchover by protein size of there always being a continuous path to it being very rare for there to be a continuous path connecting the top and the bottom of the nuclear pore through a central channel. And our big finding was that that is part of what defines a crossover in the transport behavior from a soft barrier for small proteins to a hard barrier, essentially making it very difficult for them to get through.
Could you speak to what these things are that you're studying, these nuclear pore complexes?
I like to think of the nuclear pore complex as a gatekeeper or like a crossing guard, because it directs the molecular traffic into and out of a cell's nucleus. So that's fundamentally why it's important. You have RNA that's generated inside the nucleus and needs to get out, and you have proteins that are created out in the cytoplasm or the cytosol of the cell, and that needs to get into the nucleus. So the nuclear pore serves as this conduit or passageway going across. So that's kind of fundamentally why it's important. There's two kinds of transport. One is facilitated, so there's another protein that helps ferry it across, and then there's also passive. So we studied passive, and you need to have kind of a passive limitation in order for facilitated transport to matter. So what I would say, I'm trying to think of a good way to describe what we mean by the soft versus the hard barrier. So by soft barrier, what we mean is essentially that it scales like the size or the mass of the protein to a power, it's proportional to the protein size or mass. Once it reaches a certain size, then it goes like an exponential to that mass. So essentially it becomes much steeper. If you think of the time that it takes most likely for the protein to get across, jumps up dramatically once you reach that hard barrier. And what we realized in our work was that switchover in behavior correlated with when it switches from there always being at least one continuous path going through that central channel to it that being a very rare occurrence of a continuous path, any continuous path that would go all the way through.
Could you speak more to how you developed this model? What were mm-hmm. some of the challenges in implementation in this and mm-hmm. some of the data that went into developing? Mm-hmm.
There are kind of two main parts. So And there's like an ordered part and a disordered part. The ordered part is that scaffold that I was talking about. And also we modeled the nuclear envelope as something that was ordered. We were informed by experimental measurements and experimental models. So part of it was from a cryo-EM structure. That was actually how we got the outline of the nuclear envelope. Then there were two different scaffolds that we used, and those were published works. My first author, it was Lin in 2016, and there was another one, Kim, 2018. That first one was what's called a composite structure. There were details of thermophilic yeast that were mapped onto a human cryo-EM structure. And then the Kim 2018 one, that was all yeast, and that was developed using something called integrative modeling. So it was informed by not just structures, but also experimental measurements. But in general, so that was the sort of the ordered part or the structured part. And then we still had to model the disordered part. They're called nucleoporins or FG nucleoporins. Those are known to be disordered and dynamic. And we captured those with a coarse grain model that had been developed in another lab in the Onc laboratory.
Dr. Axiomentia, did you want to jump in here and maybe just talk about the use of the coarse grain model? I know we've spoken to you in the past a lot about all atom molecular dynamics. So would you like to maybe speak to this choice?
Yeah, sure. We are in general interested in increasing realism of our simulations. And that, of course, requires bigger and bigger computers, better and better codes. But also the model themselves, you know, they have to be refined. Now, the nuclear pore complex is probably it is the largest nanopore that we've studied. You know, we've spoken previously a lot on using nanopores for DNA, maybe protein sequencing. Now, this is on the other side of the spectrum. Those are really big in terms of molecular dimensions pores. They are 50 nanometers across, and they require appropriate modeling methods and tools. So we are pursuing what I call a multi-resolution strategy to modeling those systems, where we describe the system at several resolutions at the same time. Now, the paper that we just published in Nature Communication describes our first study where we use the coarse grain model to look at passive transport. But it's only the first study of many. In fact, we are working also on the all atom model of the same system, which will provide greater resolution in terms of spatial dimensions. At the cost of providing a limited time scale. So with the coarse grain model, we are able to see spontaneous transport of proteins through this fluctuating mesh of filaments. And that is something that would be very, very difficult to probe using all atom approaches. Now, the model itself is, in a way, a separate accomplishment. So in building the model, so David combined several models that were already out there. Like there was a coarse grain model specifically developed by Onc Laboratory in Netherlands to study the central mesh of the nuclear pore. But to that, David had to add custom models of the lipid bilayer and also the scaffold. So that itself, I think, is an important step forward towards more realistic models of large biological systems. So I also like to highlight the fact that we not only did the modeling, right, and looked at what happens, so to say, but we rationalized the model in terms of mathematical theory, right? And that's where the second author of the paper, Honey, Joe, that's basically what his contribution. That was a highly non-trivial part because no one has done anything like that before, right? So we had this a mess of confirmations, like it's like, what's a good
analogy? 7,000. Yeah.
So it was really like a meshwork in a way that is dynamic. And Honey, he looked at it as from a point of view of a percolation theory, which means he looked whether or not a continuous pass forms at from one side of the port to the other. Once we knew how exactly the process of permeation happens, then we could rationalize it and generalize it and express it in terms of the mathematical equations that linked the volume available to proteins to the rate with which they permeate through this highly fluctuating dynamic pore.
Could you speak to the computational resources that you used?
Sure, yeah. I can speak to that. So really, we used the GPU nodes on Frontera and also Stampede 2 to run simulations. So the software we used was something that's developed in the Axmentiev lab called ARBD, that's Atomic Resolution Brownian Dynamics. I would say the main, what really helped in having those Frontera and Stampede 2 resources available was we were able to do a large range of sizes of proteins. And for each size, it was something like 13 proteins. We were able to run multiple replicas under different conditions. I think it kind of spoke to the robustness of our results. So, we were able to have multiple replicas and also to do more than one confinement volume. And I think that was, so having those resources available made it so that we had this robustness. And also, we had three different models. So we had two versions of the KIM 2018 one, the yeast one. By having so many computational resources, we're able to add on to what we had already done in the paper and to get, essentially preliminary results in the order of days to compare to other work that we had already done. So it's very much, it sped up the process and I think gave a lot more weight to the robustness of our results.
You've been listening to David Winogradoff of the FDA and Alexey Axmentiev of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Supersized Science is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world, brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the host, not of the University of Texas at Austin. For the Texas Advanced Computing Center, I'm Jorge Salazar.